Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 19 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. This edition is published on Friday the 9th of May 2025. I'm Andrew, your presenter, and joined in the studio today by newsreaders Margaret and Desney. Good afternoon. And in the news this week, the search is on for someone to manage the new winter gardens. A local health centre is evacuated again. Further cuts planned for the county council. And Delia taunts the tractor boys. All this coming your way during the next hour or so. And so, with no birthdays this week, it's straight on with the first part of the news. And Desney, what's up first?
Well, we begin with a search for an operator to run the winter gardens, Andrew. Town bosses have launched a search for an operator to run a landmark Norfolk building as part of a major regeneration project. The Grade 2 listed winter gardens on the Golden Mile in Great Yarmouth is currently undergoing an £18 million restoration to transform it into a year-round visitor destination. Now, Great Yarmouth Borough Council is seeking a partner or group of partners to take on the day-to-day running of the venue when it reopens. This includes managing visitor services, food and drink operations, public engagement, corporate events and the overall running of the building. Councillor Carl Smith, leader of the Borough Council, said, "This is a fantastic opportunity for an operator or operators to be part of the future of one of the most iconic buildings in the borough. We want to make sure the venue delivers high-quality services that do justice to the venue for residents and the millions of visitors who come to the seafront every year. The new-look winter gardens will include community spaces, catering facilities and opportunities for leisure, entertainment and learning. A planting scheme will be developed in partnership with experts, including the Royal Botanical Gardens in Kew. The project is being funded by a £12.3 million grant from the National Lottery Heritage Fund, along with £6 million from the government's Town Deal Fund." The council said the procurement process includes an indicative 15-year contract with a potential annual turnover of up to £3 million. The Winter Gardens, once known as the People's Palace, has been part of Great Yarmouth's seafront for more than a century. The building has stood empty since 2008 when concerns over its deteriorating condition forced its closure. Restoration work is expected to be completed in the second half of 2027.
Hello, this is Margaret, and I've got a continuation of the story that Desney has just read out to you. So, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. A landmark project to save one of Great Yarmouth's most iconic buildings has received a major funding boost. Historic England has awarded a £500,000 grant towards the restoration of the Grade 2 listed Winter Gardens. The building, one of the last surviving Victorian seaside winter gardens in the country, has been closed to the public since 2008 and remains on the National Heritage at Risk Register due to its deteriorating condition. The new grant will fund essential repairs to the iron framework and the removal and conservation of the building's historic glass ahead of a future reinstallation. Tony Calladine, Regional Director for Historic England, said, "Great Yarmouth Winter Gardens is an extraordinary survivor of Victorian engineering and seaside architecture. By working collaboratively with the National Lottery Heritage Fund, Great Yarmouth Borough Council and local partners, we're helping to breathe new life into a building that's been a focal point of Great Yarmouth seafront for over a century. Originally built in Torquay in 1881, the Winter Gardens was dismantled and transported to Great Yarmouth in 1904. It was designed by John Watson and William Harvey, with intricate ironwork created in Staffordshire by Jesse Tilsley of the Crescent Ironworks. The restoration project, backed by £12.3 million from the National Lottery Heritage Fund and £6 million from the Government's Towns Fund, aims to transform the long-vacant building into a year-round, publicly accessible venue with sea views, a cafe, exhibition space and community event programmes. Horticultural displays echoing the building's original floral interior will once again be a key feature of the revamped space. Councillor Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "We're extremely grateful to Historic England for this major grant support, as our team of heritage experts breathes new life into this landmark building on the seafront. Alongside a wide range of partners and stakeholders, we look forward to works getting underway and being able to once more welcome visitors to enjoy the unique venue this amazing project will deliver."
Sci-fi and fantasy stars lined up to attend Norfolk Comic Con. Sci-fi and fantasy fans are gearing up for the Great Yarmouth Comic Con. The event, which is set to take place at the Great Yarmouth Racecourse on May the 31st and June the 1st, will see the likes of Stranger Things actor Alec Utgoff and Doctor Who's Gemma Redgrave. Organisers have said this is the first time a Stranger Things actor has attended a Comic Con event in Norfolk or Suffolk and possibly even East Anglia. They also said Gemma Redgrave will be attending the event on the same day the latest Doctor Who series concludes in cinemas. Is that right? It concludes on TV that day, I know. Vincent Regan, who has appeared in 300, Troy, Clash of the Titans, Aquaman and Ghost Rider, will also be attending the event, as well as Lauren Barrand, the actress behind Paddington. Andrew Loveday and Emily Wyatt from the cult gangster franchise Rise of the Foot Soldier will also be at the event. A spokesperson for Great Yarmouth Comic Con said, "We're delighted and incredibly excited how Great Yarmouth Comic Con continues to grow. We're bringing some really amazing guests this year that normally only attend big city events. Gemma Redgrave, attending on the day the finale of the current Doctor Who series is released, is amazing. Vincent and Alec from One Piece and Stranger Things, both will, with a new series being released this year, and two of the biggest series worldwide, is incredible to bring them to our hometown. And the first ever appearance at a convention of the actress behind Paddington Bear and the main characters from Rise of the Foot Soldier. On top of all this, there are a host of live shows, props, retro gaming, one of the Magic Circle's top magicians, and hundreds of characters to meet and have your photo with. There really is something for all the family." For more information, visit gycomiccon. That's gycomiccon. Great Yarmouth Comic Con, that must stand for, mustn't it? gycomiccon.co.uk, or search for the event on Facebook.
It's as clear as mud, Desney.
Yeah,
well,
definitely.
Done. Back to nursery reading for you. Right. Government seeking costs for clean-up after tanker collision. Officials will seek compensation for the cost of cleaning up millions of plastic pellets that washed ashore on Norfolk's beaches after two ships crashed in the North Sea. US oil tanker Stena Immaculate was damaged and caught fire after being hit by a container ship So Long, about 12 miles off the coast of East Yorkshire. A Filipina national died in the collision, and the ship's captain, a 59-year-old Russian, Vladimir Mutin from Primorsky, St. Petersburg, was subsequently charged with gross negligence manslaughter. It led to a major clean-up operation on Norfolk beaches after plastic nodules and other debris began washing up along several miles of coastline. Giant vacuum cleaners were deployed to clear up the plastic, and dozens of council staff and other officials were deployed in the operation, which lasted several days. Environmental groups worried marine life and seabirds could be harmed by the pollution. Northwest Norfolk MP James Wilde has sought assurances over who will foot the bill for the extensive clean-up. Speaking in the House of Commons, he asked if the government will be pursuing financial redress from the ship's operators for the costly operation. Mike Kane, Parliamentary Undersecretary for the Department for Transport, confirmed HM Coast Guard's counter-pollution and salvage team is already investigating compensation. He said the team are in the process of compiling a comprehensive cost recovery claim following the collision in the Humber estuary. The claim will seek to recover the full costs of the government personnel, response equipment, including air surveillance, and the services of specialist technical advisers used in response to the incident and its aftermath. The effects of the crash in the North Sea had already been felt in the area. Following the illusion, a term used to describe a ship hitting a stationary object, the Stena Immaculate tanker travelled to the port of Great Yarmouth.
Pipes in £91 million upgrade would stretch from Norwich to Brussels. More than 180 miles of gas pipes are set to be upgraded across the east of England, enough to run from Norwich to Brussels. Cadent, the UK's largest gas distribution network, is investing £91 million over the next 12 months to replace ageing metallic pipes, many over 100 years old, with new plastic ones to future-proof supply for 1.6 million properties locally. The upgrades will include almost 50 miles of pipeline across Norfolk and around 45 miles in Suffolk. Works began last month and will run through to March 2026. It is part of a three-decade programme which began in 2002 to upgrade the UK gas network. Kerry Stimpson, Cadent's head of investment, said, "We are very aware that the majority of homes across the east of England rely on gas for central heating, and it's our job to make sure they get it safely and reliably throughout the year." Metallic gas pipes have a safe working life, and as they reach the end of that, it is our responsibility to replace them. There are also big environmental gains for the region as part of these upgrades, as it reduces methane emissions and enables a move to more renewable gases like biomethane. This is essential for a cleaner future. The UK will need energy to come from a range of sources to meet demand and be sustainable. Every year, Cadent is responsible for the upkeep and safe working of around 14,300 miles of pipes in the east of England, which are mostly underneath the region's roads.
A ramshackle structure erected to protect a boat owner's pride and joy will have to be removed after a battle with officials. Kate Gabriel, who owns Sun Penny, a wooden launch located at Wilmack Staithe near Ludham, has lost an appeal to keep the covering erected at the private mooring. It means the structure will have to be taken down, following the decision by the Planning Inspectorate. The planning wrangle began in July last year after the Broads Authority refused permission for the 8-metre cover at Mrs Gabriel's Manor Gates garden property. Officers ruled the steel-framed canvas risked harming the Ludham conservation area, also complaining it was incongruous and was made with low-quality materials. This led Mrs Gabriel to appeal to the Planning Inspectorate, as the government department that determines planning disputes. In her testimonial, Mrs Gabriel claimed to be aware of the ecological importance of the area, but argued the structure was low impact. The structure is designed to be as low profile as possible and is coloured drab olive brown so as to minimise visual impact, she added. She also said she believes the cover created a sheltered habitat for water voles and otters. However, this held no sway with the planning inspectorate, who dismissed her appeal. The official agreed that the cover significantly harms this tranquil part of the Broads, which is surrounded by unspoilt woodland. David Reed, the inspector, said, "The appellant seeks the boat cover to protect the mahogany decks of their launch from damage due to exposure to the weather. The cost of necessary repairs have been considerable, and a full-length deck cover would be heavy and cumbersome. These undoubted benefits of the boat cover for the appellant are appreciated, but do not outweigh the harm that is caused to the character and appearance of the Ludham Conservation Area."
Two in hospital after second evacuation of health centre. Two women have been taken to the hospital and a further five checked at the scene by paramedics following a possible gas exposure at a GP's in a seaside village. Emergency services were called to the Caister Health Centre in West Road at 1:15pm on Tuesday. All staff were evacuated from the site, with the centre confirming that emergency services have been investigating changes in air quality. A hazardous area response team, two ambulances and one ambulance officer vehicle, all attended the scene. Five people were assessed at the scene and two women were transported to the James Paget Hospital in Galston for further assessment. A spokeswoman for Caister Health Centre said the health centre was evacuated as a precautionary measure and patient appointments were moved to nearby Newtown Surgery. Investigations are still ongoing, but it is believed there is no ongoing risk to staff or the public and the situation will continue to be monitored. The practice is now open again and patients should continue to attend appointments unless they are otherwise informed. One elderly patient who wished to remain anonymous said, "I have just been turned away from my appointment. They told me they'll contact me and give me another date. I didn't get told any details about what had happened, but there seemed a sense of panic." Another woman added, "It is worrying that yet another incident has happened. I'm sure in time it will be clearer what is happening, but seems odd there's another incident there. Wishing those affected a speedy recovery." An ambulance service statement said, "We were called at 1:15pm with reports of possible gas exposure at a property in West Road, Caister. We sent the hazardous area response team, two ambulances and one ambulance officer vehicle. A total of five patients were assessed at the scene, with two women being transported to the James Paget Hospital for further assessment and care." The large-scale response comes after an incident on April the 29th, when the surgery was evacuated after people inside began to feel unwell. 16 people were treated at the scene and four people made their own way to the hospital as a precaution. At the time, a centre spokesman said, investigations are still ongoing, but it is believed there is no ongoing risk to staff or the public. And I think Margaret's got more of an update on that curious incident.
Yeah, this has been rolling all this week, this story, and the piece Margaret has got now was, can I say, hot off the press this morning.
It so certainly
it's,
was, yes.
Straight to us. So over to you, Margaret.
We are nothing but hot off the press, Andrew. Right. An investigation has been launched into air quality at a medical centre after it was evacuated twice in just over 1 week due to unexplained illnesses. Caister Health Centre remained shut yesterday after an incident the day before saw two women needing hospital and a further five assessed at the scene. Initially, paramedics thought it was due to possible gas exposure, but that has since been ruled out. A spokesperson for Cadent, the local gas network, said an engineer attended the location and carried out a full inspection of the site, but there were no gas readings and no carbon monoxide alarms had been activated. The gas supply to the site had already been turned off following a similar incident on April the 29th. That earlier episode saw 16 people fall ill, with four making their own way to hospital. Despite both incidents, health officials have yet to identify the cause behind the symptoms. A sign on the door of the practice reads, "We are sorry for the inconvenience caused, but we are having to close this practice temporarily as further checks are taking place." The pharmacy and dentist located in the same building were also closed by Wednesday afternoon, after briefly opening earlier in the day. A spokesperson for Caister Health Centre, a branch of East Norfolk Medical Practice, said the building itself is being investigated. Caister Health Centre will remain closed until further notice, while the air quality of the site is further investigated, they said. One woman, who wishes to remain anonymous, visited the dentist within the practice the day after the initial incident on April the 29th. "I called up the day of said gas leak and was told everything is fine and my appointment was still going ahead the next morning. But reception was empty, like ghostly empty." Neighbouring residents say they've been left in the dark. A woman who lives across the road from the health centre said she'd not noticed anything about the air quality in the area. "But it does make you wonder what's happening. Whatever it is needs to be sorted. It's all mysterious at the moment." Another neighbour said, "All I heard was that it was a suspected gas leak, but I don't know what happened. Nobody's telling us anything," she added. A man going to the pharmacy said he was supposed to pick up a prescription for his wife. The chemist had contacted him in the morning and said it would be ready to collect in an hour. "But now the place is closed and I don't know what I'm supposed to do," he said. Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth, said, "I've been in touch with the centre and everything is under control, with the staff fully on top of the situation. I will keep in touch with the practice to ensure it is back open as soon as it's safely possible." The spokesperson for Cadent said the gas at the location had already been turned off following the previous incident on April the 29th. An engineer also attended on that occasion, but no readings were discovered. The health centre's spokesperson said all patient appointments will be rearranged at the surgeries and patients will be contacted with further information. "We ask that patients order their prescriptions over the phone or via the NHS app. The safety of our staff and patients remains our priority." The centre declined to comment on whether the illnesses were a result of sick building syndrome, SBS, a condition where people develop symptoms while spending time in particular premises. The symptoms, which could include headaches, fatigue, skin rashes and nausea, typically worsen while in the building and improve or disappear once the individual leaves. The exact cause of SBS is often unknown, but it is believed to be related to poor indoor air quality or other environmental factors.
Tributes pour in after death of popular pub landlord. Tributes have been pouring in after a popular pub landlord died on Thursday the 1st of May. Jonathan Beals was the landlord of the New Entertainer in Galston. The pub announced the sad news on social media yesterday. Their statement read, "With heavy hearts, we have to announce our friend and landlord, John, passed away yesterday." Many locals and fellow pub landlords took to the comments section of the post to pay their respects to Mr. Beals. John Annis commented, "John was the closest thing I had to a brother when we were growing up. There wasn't much we didn't do together. R.I.P. my friend." Bellevue Galston also paid tribute, writing, "We're heartbroken to hear of the passing of John, a fellow landlord and good friend to many. A familiar face and a big part of the local pub community, he'll be truly missed. Our thoughts are with his family, friends and all who knew him." The Short Blue also paid their respects, adding, "We are all so sad to hear of John's passing here. Top landlord and top man, sending condolences and love to his family."
A further £41.5 million of cuts and savings will have to be found at Norfolk County Council next year, and council chiefs are unable to rule out reducing services for the public. Andrew Jamieson, deputy leader at County Hall and cabinet member for finance, warned tough decisions would have to be made, including particular pressure on adult social care and children's services. The Conservative-run council has to find millions of pounds of savings in recent years and has just started the process, which will lead to millions more in 2026/27. Mr. Jamieson said the need for more savings would edge the authority nearer to affording only services which the council is legally obliged to provide. Officers, in a report which will come before the council's cabinet today, state the size of the budget gap forecast for 26/27 is such that there is a risk that the council will be obliged to consider reductions in service levels. Mr. Jamieson said, in broad terms, we're having to look at finding another £41.5 million of savings. And that figure would have been higher if we had not had our transformation programme. But £41.5 million is still a very significant figure, particularly as we fear we're not going to get any additional help from the government in terms of an increase in public spending. We still deliver above and beyond what we are statutorily required to provide in a number of areas. But there's no doubt that we may have to look at these still further. I am hoping this could be addressed through efficiencies rather than curtailing services. The start of the budget setting process at County Hall, which also assumes a 2.99% hike in the authority's share of the council tax, comes at a time of flux for Norfolk's councils. All eight authorities are facing abolition under local government reorganisation. That process could see new unitary councils created, and Mr. Jamieson believes a single council would be the most cost-effective model, a view not shared by the district councils. The council is also considering extending its medium-term strategy, over which it has identified a need to save £171.4 million by a further year to 2029/30. Political opponents said that was kicking the can down the road for savings and potentially to other councils. But Mr. Jamieson said, I would dispute that. I would say that making £41.5 million of savings in the coming year will still mean we are making tough decisions. And what has the council cut so far? Recent years have seen the council trying to save money by focusing on prevention rather than costly residential care within adult and children's services. But disabled people were also targeted, with the authority changing a policy so people had to pay more for their care. The council looked to cut costs by closing recycling centres on Wednesdays, bringing in a controversial booking system for tips and switching off thousands of street lights. What do political opponents say? Brian Watkins, leader of the opposition Liberal Democrat group of County Hall, said, every year this council is forced to make substantial savings to cover its deficit. This practice is completely unsustainable and threatens our vital services. The latest figure of £45.1 million in savings is deeply worrying and will surely be met with concern from those who rely on our services to live fulfilled lives. Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour group, said, the county council can do so much better. Residents are being let down. Vast sum on consultants, initiatives with fancy names but no substance, and accountancy tricks to push the burden onto new councils after the upcoming reorganisation. Much as we need more government support, there is no escaping the Conservatives have failed to get a grip and are kicking the can down the road. Dr. Catherine Rowett, Green group leader, said, the ongoing problems of underfunded public services, including services that the county councils are obliged to provide, reflects the unacceptable inequality of wealth and opportunities, both in Norfolk and in the UK generally, which is continuing to get worse under the so-called Labour government after so many years of Conservative cuts. The Conservative administration has choices that it can make, and I hope it will seek to ensure the most vulnerable communities are not losing resources they most rely on.
Prolific shoplifter jailed for multiple thefts. A prolific shoplifter has been jailed following a series of shop thefts in two seaside towns. Sean Dixon of Borough Close Lowestoft was sentenced at Norwich Magistrates Court on Wednesday, April the 30th, after pleading guilty to 23 counts of theft from shops in Great Yarmouth and Galston. He also pleaded guilty to one count of assault and one count of assaulting a police officer. The court heard how Dixon stole items including meat, coffee, laundry products, chocolate and clothes worth a total of more than £2,500 from supermarkets and retailers in the area between August and December 2024. Dixon was handed an 8-month prison sentence and ordered to pay £400 in compensation. The court also granted a 2-year criminal behaviour order, CBO, banning him from all East of England cooperative stores for any reason and from remaining on any retail premises in Great Yarmouth when asked to leave by a member of staff.
A man who refused to stop dealing drugs while behind bars has been sentenced to another 7 years. Chase Staff, 31, of HMP Mount, was jailed for 5 years in November 2023 after pleading guilty to being concerned with a supply of cocaine. While he was in custody, concerns were raised that he was continuing to deal cocaine to people in and around Great Yarmouth, using a network of friends and associates to help. Officers examined Staff's phone calls and was heard bragging, "I've made more money in here than I did out there." A financial investigation began into all those who were believed to be aiding him. On January the 31st, 2024, the suspects were arrested and their phones were seized. Some of them refused to give police their passcodes. Evidence was retrieved and everyone admitted to the charges. They were all sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on Wednesday. Chase Staff was sentenced to another 7 years imprisonment after pleading guilty to the same charge as before, being concerned in the supply of cocaine. Charlie Haylock, 32, of Salk Road, Galston, was jailed for 13 months for being concerned in the supply of cannabis. Jamie Measures, 31, of Laurel Drive, Bradwell, was imprisoned for 6 months after failing to comply with an RIPA notice, namely disclosing a mobile phone PIN number. Chance Staff, 20, of St Anne's Crescent, Galston, was handed an 8-month suspended sentence for possession with intent to supply cannabis, possession of criminal property as cash, and failure to comply with an RIPA notice, namely disclosing a mobile phone PIN number. Charlotte Kerrison, 31, of Ormsby Lane, Filby, Verity Staff, 38, of St Anne's Crescent, Galston, and Darren Stevens, 36, of Bensley Road, Martham, were each given a 12-month community order for converting criminal property as transfers of cash. Inspector James Makepeace from Great Yarmouth's Neighbourhood Policing Team said, "This result highlights our unwavering determination to combat drug supply in our town. Through careful investigative work, we were able to irrefutably show Chase Staff remained committed to his role supplying drugs in Great Yarmouth. He was fully aware of the illegalities of his actions carried on regardless. Drug dealers make their money by preying on the vulnerable, and we will continue to pursue those offenders to protect our community."
swing. You should have heard this knocked-out jailbird sing.
That, of course, was Elvis with Jailhouse Rock. Just before we go into the second news, and as it's the celebrations of VE Day today as we're recording, thought Desney and Margaret, as I've persuaded them maybe, to have a little chat about memories of the years after VE Day, because, as they say, they're far too young to remember the actual day, but thought they'd have a chat about the years after VE Day.
I was a baby in my pram in 1944, so I must admit I remember nothing. And my parents never ever talked about it. I don't remember rationing, because apparently you couldn't get any sweets. not that bothered me, because I didn't have pocket money in those days. The only thing I can remember is Coronation Day, because I was, I don't know how old I was then, but I remember it rained. And all the kids on Arundel Road that were having a street party...
You were nine.
I was nine. Oh, I can't do maths, Destiny. You know me. We were all sort of like traipsed down the road to the Admiral Seymour Public House, even the underage children. And I've got a picture of my mum in the background wielding a spoon. I don't know why. But all I can remember is it rained and we ended up at the Admiral Seymour that Andrew knows very well indeed.
Please. Destiny.
Yeah, I remember the coronation, but I can remember before that, I do remember ration books, because I can remember my mum using one when we went to the grocers, and I've had one in my possession ever since, I think.
Is it all tatty and doggy now?
Well, no, it's not too bad. It's not too bad, because my grandchildren even have taken it to school as a kind of...
That's a historical document.
From history, you know, when they've been talking about the Second World War. I remember Princess Elizabeth and Prince Philip getting married in 1947. You never saw that on television. No, we didn't have a television then anyway, but we had to go to the cinema to see it, so it must have been probably the week after. I can remember standing on my mum or dad's lap and seeing the Queen wave, Princess Elizabeth, wave on the balcony at Buckingham Palace and waving back to her and saying to them, she waved to me! You know, I was convinced she'd wave to me.
Well, there we are. So that's memories from a few years after. I think what we've seen of the celebrations, though, and the commemorations have been first class, haven't they, this week?
Yes, really interesting.
Really done the country proud.
I actually watched most of the programme on television this morning, Thursday, about the service at Westminster Abbey and the royal family there. And they spoke to a lot of the, you know, veterans of the war. Yeah. And I found it very moving. But I did like the what was on the other day. Was it Sunday? I can't remember. I don't know how the days go.
Monday, there was a Monday. Lot on. It was Monday morning.
That's right, yes. Yeah. And that's what, then when they did the flypast on the, yes, when they watched right. the back,
and
they didn't.
And if we were lucky enough, any of us cased away, the red arrows went, went straight over, didn't
they? Yes, that's right, because they gathered together in Norfolk. Right.
And I was amazed at Prince Louis. He restrained himself from making funny faces. Yeah. Bless him.
No, we did, as always, we do things like this very, very well,
don't we? It's the marching of all those units that kept in step the whole way through, and you think, nobody does it like the Brits do.
We do pomp and splendour very well.
Oh, we do.
Desney, do you want to bring us up to date with the latest in the second part of the news, please?
OK, then. Probes launched into string of fraud cases at Norfolk Council. This is another long one. Conniving criminals have been posing as council workers to con members of the public out of money as part of a string of suspected fraud cases involving Norfolk County Council. A new report has revealed that six such potential frauds against the council were uncovered between October and April and have since been subject to an investigation. The council stressed all six cases were external rather than attempts at fraud by council workers. What are the cases? The Conservative-run County Council said it can only provide limited details of the allegations while investigations are being carried out. But one of the cases being probed, which dates back to 2024, involved what is known as business email compromise. This is when criminals pose as council employees on email to ask people to pay money into fraudulent accounts. Another of the cases under investigation relates to potential identity fraud, but the council would not give any further information. Three cases concerned funding arrangements around people who were receiving care. One of these was closed with no further action because of insufficient evidence, but the other two are ongoing. The council has not provided any further details. The sixth case involved a possible fraud over what the council described as commercial funding agreements, but this was closed because it was uneconomic to pursue. The council said that once its own internal investigations had confirmed potential fraudulent activity, it would request separate police investigations. The authority, which agreed £45 million of cuts and savings in February, has not yet put a figure on how much could have been lost through the alleged fraud cases. What does the council say? A Norfolk County Council spokesman said the council takes fraud very seriously and is committed to maintaining the highest standards of integrity and accountability. We have robust measures in place to detect and prevent fraud, including whistleblowing processes, dedicated financial systems, comprehensive financial controls, regular audits, participation in the National Fraud Initiative, internal data matching processes, data matching between Norfolk local authorities through the Norfolk Fraud Hub, trained investigators, and mandatory anti-fraud training for staff. We encourage anyone with concerns to report them so that we can take swift action to protect public funds and maintain trust in our services. More investigations in the hands of police. The report, discussed by members of the Council's Audit and Governance Committee on Tuesday, April the 29th, also stated that two previously reported criminal investigations remain in the hands of Norfolk Police. While the council has not revealed further details about either case, it is understood that one of the investigations involves fraud allegations around the management of the council's county farms estate. A fraud investigation was launched in 2020, and two men, one in his 50s from Wisbeach and one in his 40s from Danham Market, were arrested on suspicion of fraud. The pair were questioned at King's Lynn Police Investigation Centre before being released. Police have yet to make any further arrests and nobody has been charged, but the council report says further progress has been made over the past 6 months. A third case involving allegations surrounding adult social care will also see a person facing trial for alleged fraud. A suspect has been charged with two counts of fraud in relation to adult social care, with a total value of £80,000. The papers said a trial date had been set for October this year, but the council has not provided further details.
A replacement £11.3 million primary school has sparked concern it could trigger parking and congestion nightmare. Plans for a new 420-place primary school in Bradwell, near Great Yarmouth, are seen by Norfolk County Council as essential to cope with an influx of pupils from hundreds of new homes. But Bradwell Parish Council has objected to the proposals, along with six members of the public. While the Parish Council is not against the principle of the new school, which would replace the existing 210-capacity Homefield C of E Primary School, it is concerned about the parking and congestion nightmare that will ensue. But officers, in a report which will come before members of the Council's Planning Committee on Wednesday, are recommending approval. They said County Hall's new Highways Department had said the extra traffic was unlikely to present a highway safety concern. Officers said, whilst it is accepted there would be an increase in associated parental traffic and parking, given the advice of the Highway Authority, it would be difficult to sustain an objection to the proposal on highway grounds. The new school would be built on land to the north of Chaplin Road, part of the 700-home Bluebell Meadow development. Council officers say the existing primary schools would not be able to take the extra pupils from the new homes, about half of which have been built so far. Carl Anderson, Conservative County Councillor for Lothing Land Division, fully supports the plans. The current school accepts pupils aged from 3 to 11, but the replacement unit would admit pupils aged 4 to 11, with 60 children in each year group. If approved, council officers hope the new school, featuring a two-storey building with 14 classrooms, would welcome its first pupils from spring 2027. And just a short one here about a plan to reduce hospital admissions. A project aimed at reducing hospital admissions has been launched. Age UK Norwich, Great Yarmouth Borough Council Community Hub, Public Health and the Health and Wellbeing Partnership have joined forces for the Great Hydrate project. The initiative, founded by the Improved Better Care Fund, aims to promote health and well-being by encouraging individuals, especially those over 50, to drink the daily recommended amount of fluids. Proper hydration is linked to numerous health benefits, including a lower risk of urinary tract infections, UTIs, and falls, both of which can lead to hospital admissions. The project aims to reach as many people as possible in Great Yarmouth, providing individuals and community teams with resources to engage in meaningful conversations about maintaining healthy hydration levels. Kelly Parkin, health specialist at Age UK Norwich, said, "Staying hydrated keeps everything running smoothly, supporting your energy, clarity and overall sense of well-being." The project includes a free in-person training course developed by Age UK Norwich and the University of East Anglia in 2024.
Delia takes aim at absent Ipswich fans. Former Norwich City majority shareholder Delia Smith levelled a blow at Ipswich Town fans in a recent podcast appearance. Delia and her husband Michael Wynne-Jones appeared on the Talk Norwich City podcast earlier this week to discuss their time at the helm of the club. When asked to give her final message to Norwich City fans, the new honorary life president of the club used the opportunity to remind supporters of the difference between Norwich and Ipswich fans when faced with adversity. Her parting message to fans was, "Thank you for being the best football supporters in the world, because they are the best football supporters in the world. We got relegated and we sold the same number of season tickets. When Ipswich Town were in trouble, their stadium was half empty. Their fans didn't turn up. Our supporters, they've always turned up." Delia and Wyn Jones's time as majority shareholders was brought to an end earlier this year as Mark Attanasio's Norfolk's Holdings Group completed its takeover of the club. The two are now bestowed with the title of honorary life presidents of the club. The TV chef was subject to a torrent of abuse the last time the Canaries visited Portman Road. The 83-year-old's car was left damaged after hooligans lobbed beer cans and flares at it. No arrests had been made following the incident at Portman Road, but fans were arrested on both sides following violent clashes before a repeat game in April 2024. The two clubs will do battle again next campaign, with Ipswich Town's relegation confirmed last Saturday following a heavy defeat by Newcastle United. City fans will no doubt be looking forward to the prospect of stretching their unbeaten run against Kieran McKenna's side. And more about Norwich City. City can't waste time. Chris Sutton has warned that Norwich City cannot waste time this summer as they head into another pivotal rebuild with growing pressure on those at the top of the club. Writing in today's Norwich Evening News, the former City striker delivers a hard-hitting column that underlines the scale of the challenge ahead, regardless of whether Jack Wilshere or another candidate is handed the head coach role. "Whether it's Wilshere or anyone else, this Norwich job isn't an easy one," Sutton writes. "There's going to be another overhaul of players and an increased spotlight because of the abandonment of the Torup project." He questions sporting director Ben Napper's record to date with few decisions that have paid off and little evidence to suggest next season will bring improvement. Sutton says hope rather than belief is driving most of the fan base's optimism and warns that Norwich are closer to relegation than the playoffs, even before any likely sales of Josh Sargent or Boya Sants has happened. "The teams coming up will invest and the ones coming down will regroup," Sutton adds. "If you stand still in football, even for a moment, you begin to go backwards."
And we are always impartial here, but I see Desney's wearing her green and yellow scarf, and I don't know why. A Vauxhall Nova was among the many items destroyed in a devastating fire that gutted a block of garages. Firefighters battled the blaze for 4 hours in the area behind the row of shops on Church Lane in Galston on Monday afternoon. 6 of the 20-odd garages there were gutted. In one of the garages was a Vauxhall Nova that the person renting the garage was refurbishing in his own time. Other garages contained bikes, household items and garden materials, all of which have been ruined. The Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service said that the cause of the fire remained unknown, but added that a fire investigation is going on to ascertain what happened. The owner of the garage blocks is said to be devastated, and the future of the structures is hanging in the balance. While the fire service does not know at this moment in time the cause of the fire, neighbours claim there was a controlled fire in the land behind the garages early that morning. One man, who wished to remain unnamed, said, "The smoke was so thick, it was opaque and filled the air, you could barely see. I was shocked we weren't asked to leave our homes." One woman said that she heard explosions. "I think there must have been gas bottles blowing up around the back, and the bangs were just terrifying," she said. "I'm relieved that the fire didn't spread beyond the garages, and that is thanks to the fire service, who were amazing, and it's a relief nobody was hurt." crews from Great Yarmouth, Galston, Carrow, North Walsham, Wroxham, as well as the Aerial Ladder platform from Great Yarmouth, and a control unit and tactical response vehicle from Wyndham attended.
New UK film shot at Summer Leighton Hall. A new UK comedy has been filmed at an award-winning building near Lowestoft. Lady, a blend of mockumentary and magical realism, was filmed in its entirety at Summer Leighton Hall Estate. The Grade 2 listed country house has won several accolades, including a Gold Award from Visit England Visitor Attraction Quality Scheme, making it the perfect setting for BAFTA-nominated director Samuel Abraham's latest project. The film follows a lonely, narcissistic aristocrat who tricks a struggling director into filming her every mood. Her obsession with the spotlight soon turns when she starts becoming invisible. The film, featuring Fleabag star Sean Clifford, is now in post-production and is set to be revealed at Cannes by Met Film. And another piece of news on this paper, which I don't think is connected, town revamp. A Norfolk town's high street will close in phases later this month for resurfacing works. Norfolk County Council will be carrying out the repair works on the Galston High Street, which will cost £27,000. The council says that for the work to be carried out quickly and safely, it will be necessary to close the road on certain dates. The work will involve surface dressing, line painting, and the renewal of Cat's Eyes road studs. The weather-dependent work will be carried out in phases. Road closures will only be in place for a few hours at a time on the following dates: Sunday, May the 18th, main dressing, 6 a.m. to 11 a.m, road closure. Wednesday, May the 28th, lining road stud replacement, evening overnight works, 7 p.m. to 5 a.m, road closure. A full sign diversion route will be in operation for the duration of the works, and the council says access to properties will be maintained at all times. The county council said it thanks people for their patience while this essential road maintenance work is carried out.
Speed limits on a Norfolk road are to be cut to tackle concerns drivers are going too fast and overtaking dangerously. Norfolk County Council is to extend an existing 40 mile per hour limit along more of the B1074 Herringfleet Road near St Olaves to cover a section of the road currently subject to the national speed limit. The Conservative controlled council is also bringing in a new 30 mile per hour limit on the road close to the village of St Olaves. In a county hall report, officers in the authority's highways department state the proposal of 30 mile per hour limit extension and 40 mile per hour limit extension will help prevent speeding and overtaking issues reported along Herringfleet Road. The proposal will improve the safety of pedestrians, cyclists and all highway users assessing the area. The new 30 mile per hour section along Herringfleet Road will run from the junction with Beccles Road to where the existing 40 mile per hour limit applies. The new 40 mile per hour section will be in place along Herringfleet Road from just after the junction with Heath Road and Blocker Road for just over half a mile. The County Council carried out public consultation over the proposed changes in February. Organisations including Norfolk Constabulary, Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service, Great Yarmouth Borough Council, Frin and St Olaves Parish Council were consulted, along with people living nearby. There was one objection from a person who felt lowering the current speed limits were disproportionate to the risks involved. But officers said the council has received feedback about ongoing issues with speeding and overtaking, especially in areas where residents are entering or exiting their driveways, including concealed entrances. They said lowering the speed limit was proportionate. The decision to bring in the new limits was made by Graham Plant, Norfolk County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, Infrastructure and Transport, using delegated powers.
Police step up patrols after vandalism at Burial Park. Police have increased patrols around a woodland burial park following further mindless vandalism. Investigations are continuing after youths uprooted dozens of trees and damaged stakes at Gunton Woodland Burial Park in Lowestoft last month. More than 60 trees were targeted at the site on Gunton Church Lane in North Lowestoft overnight last month, with damage caused to trees and the tree shelter while tubes were removed. Within hours of repair works being carried out, doesn't say that, but that's what I think it means, more youths were seen trashing the trees. But after being confronted by staff on the afternoon of Tuesday, April the 15th, they fled the scene. Now officers are investigating a new outbreak of vandalism as they urge locals to be vigilant and to report any incidents of antisocial behaviour. The latest vandalism took place overnight between Saturday and Sunday, April the 26th and 27th. It comes after overnight incidents on April the 19th and April the 20th and another on the afternoon of April the 15th, when youths ran off after being confronted by staff. A Suffolk police spokesman said these mindless actions show a complete lack of respect and are very upsetting. We're stepping up patrols and meanwhile ask members of the public to help us by reporting any antisocial behaviour as soon as they can so we can take effective action. Similar concerns were shared by East Suffolk councillor for the Gunton and St Margaret's ward, George King. Councillor King said, "It's deeply disturbing to see the vandalism at Gunton Woodland Burial Park, a place of peace and natural beauty that means so much to our community. I'm grateful the police are taking action and will continue working with numerous parties to introduce preventative measures that ensure this special place is respected and protected." With the grounds run by Gunton Woodlands Burial Trust, an independent non-profit-making charity, Gunton Woodland Burial Park was the first natural burial park to be opened in the Lowestoft and Great Yarmouth area more than 9 years ago in 2016. Information to Lowestoft Police on 101.
An estate agent employee has celebrated 25 years at the same company. Excuse me. Michelle Jones joined Bycroft Estate Agents in Great Yarmouth as a sales negotiator in 1999 and is now the office manager. Daniel Bycroft, managing director, said, "To say how important Michelle has been to our business over the last 25 years is an understatement. Michelle has been a constant source of stability and fun over these years and a wonderful person to work with. And not only have we appreciated this, but importantly, so have all our clients. She has helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through the process of buying or selling their homes and has built up relationships with local solicitors and other property professionals." Mr. Bycroft said, "We are blessed with a wider committed team of property professionals. Many are long-standing members with service in excess of 20 years, and the majority having worked for us for more than 10 years. This offers unparalleled continuity and dedicated service to our clients." She was presented with a bouquet of flowers, a hamper of food, and a voucher for £250.
Milestone in multi-million pound college development. A major milestone has been reached in the development of a new college campus in Great Yarmouth. Contracts have been signed for the construction of a cutting-edge college site at East Coast College's Great Yarmouth campus. contracts between Kier Construction and the Department for Education were signed on May the 1st with the go-ahead given for the new development. Work to build the new college campus will begin this month. The East Coast College is one of 16 colleges across England benefiting from £1.5 billion capital transformation fund. The college campus will be equipped with a mock hospital ward, digital suites, hair and beauty salon run by the college's students, a new gym and sports facilities, a lecture hall, training kitchens and restaurants. In addition to the upgraded facilities, the new site will enable the introduction of new courses for both 16 to 19-year-olds and adult learners, helping to meet the growing demand for education and address local skills gaps. Paul Padder, Principal and Chief Executive Officer at East Coast College, said, "We're delighted by the signing of this contract. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to create an exciting and vibrant community asset. It will help thousands of students every year to study in the incredible new facilities on offer." Mark Dady, Managing Director of Kier Construction, Eastern and Midlands, said East Coast College is a landmark project due to the scale of teaching facilities on offer. And we look forward to continuing the great work that we have done to date with both the college and the Department of Education. The construction of the campus is expected to be completed by early summer 2028, with the old site to be demolished in autumn 2028.
A play about a young person groomed into working for a County Lines gang is heading to St George's Theatre. Crossing the Line will follow Eric, played by Alex Hardy, whose world is turned upside down when he is groomed into working for a County Lines gang. The play is set to be performed at St George's Theatre in Great Yarmouth on May the 22nd at 6 p.m. And just a short piece of news here. A man remains in serious condition after an incident near a pier. Emergency services, including two ambulances, a rapid response vehicle, a paramedic car and an East Anglian air ambulance, were sent to Pier Plain in Galston on Wednesday. The emergency services were spotted at 7 p.m. near the pier, following reports of a medical emergency. A spokesman for the East of England Ambulance Service confirmed that one man was taken to James Paget Hospital by road in a serious condition. And my last piece of news this week, a commercial building in Great Yarmouth has hit the market to rent for just £8 a month. No, it's not April Fool's Day. This is what it says. Harbour Quay on Riverside Road in Galston is a 60-bedroom building and was sold to Peter Colby Commercial. There had been plans to convert the building, which has stood empty since the early 2010s, into a care home. The development is described on the property website Rightmove as a part-time completed care home. It has 60 ensuite rooms, as well as a reception, offices, communal lounges, kitchen and a top-floor hair salon. The development had approval to be a care home, but also has potential for residential conversion, subject to planning permission. And Peter Colby has since confirmed that the price displayed on the website was an administrative error.
Exhibition about former Lowestoft to Yarmouth railway line to return. An exhibition is being held about the former Lowestoft to Great Yarmouth railway line. The Lowestoft Central project, in conjunction with the Wherry Lines Community Rail Partnership, is holding the exhibition as part of national celebrations marking 200 years of the passenger railway in the UK. The line from Lowestoft to Yarmouth opened in 1903 with stations at Lowestoft North, Courton, Hopton-on-Sea, Galston Links Holt, Galston, Galston North, Yarmouth South, Yarmouth South Town and Yarmouth Beach. The line was trimmed back in the 50s due to costs involved in maintaining the Braden Viaduct across to Yarmouth Beach Station, but later upgraded in 1959 with the closure of the Beccles to Yarmouth South Town route. The exhibition includes a host of images and memories from both passengers and people who worked the line, and was first staged to mark the 50th anniversary of closure in 2020. The Lowestoft Yarmouth Railway exhibition will run inside the parcels office at Lowestoft Railway Station until Friday and open between 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. Last admission 3 p.m. Admission is free and there is no need to book.
And that was I Vow to Thee, My Country, a fitting tune to end with, as that's on VE Day. And that's it for this week's recording. I'd like to say big thanks to Margaret and Desney, our readers today. Thank you. The recording is copyright of Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. A reminder of our website address, which is grapevinegy.org, where the latest edition is always available, and there's also a contact button for getting in touch. Next week, your newsreaders will be Margaret again and Andy or Andrew. We're not sure yet, so tune in for a big surprise. We look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. And in the meantime, from all at Grapevine, stay safe, stay well, and bye for now.